Hey everyone, it's Norm Ferrar, aka The Beard Guy here, and welcome to another Lunch with Norm, The Rise of the Micro Brands. Lunch with Norm. Lunch with Norm. All right, so today we are celebrating our 100th podcast. Kelsey got me a hat. I don't know. Kelsey, where are you? He's not even. Oh!
Happy 100.
Happy 100th, Kels. Hey, did you not find something that says happy 100th podcast? Did you have to find happy birthday?
It's a little more difficult than you'd think.
Really?
With our 2-day notice, we could have prepared a little better, but you know.
So next time, Kels, are you going to let me know when it's the 250th podcast?
Yeah, well,
coming up 3 weeks in advance or something.
Yes.
All right, I couldn't even get a hat for, you know, the garden gnome. He's already got one, but.
Right. We got to get one for Dallas, too.
Dallas, the Oracle. All right. So today we're going to have sort of a fun day. We're also going to be, this is going to be unique. Can anybody take me seriously with the hat? Should I take the hat off or keep it on?
You should keep it on, at least for the intro.
No, okay. All right. So first of all, we're going to do something different today. Everybody who's watching, we're going to flip this over to a celebration over on Clubhouse. So we got that all set up. And Kelsey, if he does his job properly, we'll be posting the link into the comment section a bit later on, probably a few times.
I'll post it right now, actually.
Very good. You're on top of it.
Okay, yes, and I think we also need to mention we have a special episode tomorrow.
Yes.
That we haven't talked about at all. Dad, do you want to take that away?
Well, we're going to be working. We're not working. We got an episode tomorrow we're going to be interviewing some top Amazon women. And it's all part of the Seller Session session that's happening with Danny McMillan. And anyways, we're going to be promoting that. We'll be showing, even towards the end of this episode, we'll be promoting the link for tomorrow's. And I think it's going to be really great. I know all three ladies that are going to be coming on, and they are incredible sellers. So, all right. So for today's episode, we have Orion Avedon, and I hope, Orion, I'm pronouncing your last name properly. But anyways, she provides this really cool course about improving cash flow, and it's e-commerce brands, or just basically how to improve your cash flow by about 50% in 30 days. So today we're not going to be touching on inventory so much, but we're going to be looking at arbitrage, drop shipping, wholesale. What's the right Amazon platform for you to work with? Or if you want to check out a couple, maybe you're a private label seller and you're just checking out some other areas, we're going to be talking about that today. So I thought that was fitting for our 100th anniversary, just to dive deeper into Amazon. It's not all private label selling. Okay, so I think, Kels?
Yeah, so again, the episode, we have a bonus episode this week, tomorrow.
On Tuesday,
same time as usual. It just will be on tomorrow as well. And we also had our Gary Huang episode on Sunday that we released as well. So there's lots of Lunch with Norm to go around for this week. So yeah.
Did you get me a cake? Oh. Thanks. Not even a cupcake.
Not even a cupcake. Where's mine? You know.
You're sometimes. My kid. Yeah. You're supposed to be taking care of the old guy. Okay, so let's get this started. All right, so sit back, relax, and grab a cup of coffee and enjoy the show. Hello. Now, did I say your last name properly?
Oh, you know, Hebrew and English are written in different directions. We write Hebrew from right to left. We also talk from right to left. So my name is Orion Avedon, but Orion Avedon works perfectly.
So I really wrecked it. I got to improve my Hebrew.
I've been worse.
And I guess I have to take the hat off too, to at least look half serious when I'm talking with you. No, I got to take it off. There we go. When Kelsey can come back on with the hat. But anyways, I think it's so important about what we're going to be talking about. Now, one thing we didn't mention, by the way, the course that you have about improving your cash flow is going to be the giveaway today. So why don't we talk a little bit about that? I think it's a great giveaway. And I think each giveaway is worth over $800. So that's pretty cool.
Almost, yeah.
Yeah. So let's talk about that course. What is the giveaway today?
Well, I have a course, which is a 30-day challenge. Every day you have a little snippet of information, whether it's learning, whether it's something technical to do. And I take the people through the whole process of understanding how inventory creates cash flow for the better or for the worse. And specifically for white label sellers, cash flow is a huge thing that impacts their results, and they don't really know it. And look, I've done my MBA. I came out of it. I knew nothing about cash flow. I knew how to say cash flow. That's a real good start point. But because inventory is such a cash-intensive investment, realizing that cash flow isn't just the answer to the question, am I going to be able to pay the bills next month? It's the driving, it's the steering wheel for your business. If you start looking at your decisions, at your business, at your future through the cash flow, you will have a new lease on the business. You will have a new level of control. You will have a new way to analyze and understand your decision making.
Very good. So we're offering, or you're offering, two subscriptions to the course.
And yes, the course is built to be 30 days, mm-hmm. and then all the material is always yours, of course.
Very good. And that, if you're interested in the course, it is hashtag cashflow. I think that's what Kelsey came up with.
Yes.
And we'll be drawing that at the end. In today's episode, we are going to be cutting that off at around 45 minutes because we're going to be preparing for Clubhouse and getting everybody set up there. So hopefully everybody can go meet us over at the Clubhouse, in Clubhouse. We've got a room set up. It's under the Rise of the Micro Brands, and Kelsey's going to be posting that here. And before we get even further started, we talked a lot today. Usually we try to get into it a bit quicker, but I just wanted to give a quick shout out to everybody that's tuned in. There's tons of people. So Mero, Nicole, how are you? Simon, Yarrow, a Facebook user. There's a ton of people. Nathan, Rad, Baptiste, Faye. Anyways, everybody, if I didn't mention your name, just, you know, thank you. This podcast wouldn't exist without our community, and you guys have been supporting us so great. It's been a pleasure, you know, over these last 100 episodes to be just building this community. It's way beyond our expectations. Okay, so now let's talk a bit more about the different types of platforms or different types of selling on Amazon.
Okay. So when we started thinking about this, we discussed a few options. And the first thing I want to do is get all of us thinking about the definitions correctly. Because one of the things that has troubled me when I started doing this is that I would say something. I would talk to somebody and say, oh, so you're doing drop shipping. And they would say yes. And we would talk for half an hour. And only then I'd realize that we talked about two different things. So I did a little research today. And here's the thing. First of all, arbitrage is a process of buying an item where it's cheap and selling it where it's more expensive. It's basically retail to retail. It's going into Walmart, buying a unit or five units off the shelf, and then selling it off again in Amazon. And a lot of people who say they're doing drop shipping are actually doing something that we can call drop shipping arbitrage. It means you go into one platform, let's say eBay or AliExpress, you find an item you want to sell, and then you sell it at a higher price on a second platform, and you have no communication telling the original seller that you're reselling their product.
Okay, so people do get retail arbitrage and wholesale mixed up.
Yeah.
So can we could talk about that before we get into the drop shipping? What's the difference between arbitrage and wholesale?
Okay, and I will say that we can say that there is wholesale and wholesale arbitrage.
Right.
Wholesale is the process that wholesalers have always done. You go to a manufacturer and you say, I want to buy your stuff. They say, okay, you can take 3 pallets. That's the minimum. That's the MOQ. And you take that MOQ, that quantity, and you break it down into a smaller 1-pack quantity or 5-pack quantity, whatever it is. And then you retail it out at a higher price because you have created a service. That's okay. Wholesale. You buy at bulk and you sell one by one. Wholesale arbitrage is when I can find a one-time or multiple-time deal to buy something at bulk, but not from a manufacturer or a wholesale seller. For example, if the store down the street for me is doing a going out of business sale and they're willing to sell all the shampoos of a brand to me at a certain price point, I buy that as a wholesale buy. But okay. It's a one-time deal. I have an arbitrage here. I created a price difference, not because this is the regular process of business, simply because they have a problem that I can solve for them by buying it below price, below market price. So okay. I have an opportunity. It's an opportunity buy.
All right. So with wholesale arbitrage, retail arbitrage, you're going out and you're getting the one-time offs. And the reason why I want to talk about this today is because the terminology can mess people up. Some people are thinking it's the same thing. Retail arbitrage is actually wholesale arbitrage, and the differences. So if I'm going to, like you said, walk down the street and there is a special or a liquidation on, I can buy it. And you're not always selling the same thing. You're constantly buying and selling other products. Mm-hmm. You see something, the garden gnomes or the party hats. We can get them online. We can clear them out very quickly. On the wholesale side, what you're doing is you're going and you're creating a contract, an agreement between you and a distributor or you and the manufacturer.
Yeah.
Excuse me. And you are selling it out. Now you've got an agreement and you're selling it out on Amazon with wholesale pricing. So you can mark it up. You've been given the okay. And now you can sell it out. Correct?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's basically it. And now let me go back to drop shipping, because drop shipping is actually a wholesale agreement type. It's actually the process where you have an agreement with a supplier, mm-hmm. and what you agree upon is that you will sell first and pay second. And the most of the times when we're talking about drop shipping, you don't take the inventory in at all. So that's consignment. If you do consignment, which I've never heard in the Amazon space, you get the inventory in, but you pay as you use it up. So you pay only after you sell it. And when drop shipping happens, you have an agreement with a supplier. They will ship it out to your customers, and you will pay them after you close the deal with the customer. So it means you reduce your inventory and you delay your payment.
So you can still have an agreement with a manufacturer or distributor. However, you don't have to take the skids or the pallets or the MOQ into your warehouse.
Yeah.
They're sending it out from their facility.
Mm-hmm. Now, a lot of white label sellers mm-hmm. can't get this kind of deal.
Right.
And what a lot of people talk to me about, and they say I'm doing drop shipping, they're doing an arbitrage type of drop shipping. They don't have an agreement on that inventory. They're taking a huge risk because they commit to a sale before they have any commitment on the inventory.
All right. In your opinion, out of those three, what do you like?
Wholesale. Real like wholesale. Have a real supplier with a real business deal with them.
Right. So we had Todd Snively on the other day, and he's an expert in Amazon wholesale. He's made tens of millions of dollars off of it. He loves it. He lives by it. He used to have private label, I think he might even still have some private label brands, but he just said it's so much easier doing it this way and not having to commit to a lot of inventory. He does his research, and you know, if he does his research properly, then he doesn't have to worry too much. He'll sell out of the product, then he'll move on. But it's just another option. So I'm not sure how many people listening today are actually on or using wholesale or retail arbitrage or any of the drop shipping models that you mentioned. But there are other models or other, and we talked about this last week. There's other services out there by Amazon that people don't really talk about. You've got handmade, you've got print on demand, you've got the merch. There's so many, or custom, I should say. There's so many different services that are out there that people can use. Like, I love, and I'm going to explore more, this whole print on demand side of things. You know, there's so many different outlets out there that if you do have the ability to get, just for example, you know, some designs, go and hire a VA, get some designs made, cut a deal with a print on demand company. And then, you know, just drive traffic over to your print on demand site or handmade. There's lots of different outlets there. So Etsy, you know, you think of handmade, you think of Etsy, but Amazon's got their version of this too. So anyways, there's just so many different things outside of third party sellers. I just see Victor just popped on. I'm sure he'll have a bunch of questions, but or comments. But anyways, does anybody have any questions about these different categories that we're bringing up right now? And if you do, just let us know. If you want to come on, if you want to come on live, that would be awesome too. Okay. Now that we've talked about, are there any others that you've left out?
So basically what I have, of course, we have the white label.
Mm-hmm.
And white label isn't a brand. And having a logo isn't a brand. White label is the process of finding product, making a contract with a manufacturer, and putting your name or logo on it. And I love that model.
Mm-hmm.
But to really brand it, you have to have more than just a logo on a product. You have to have a full story, because a brand is a promise. It's a communication with your target audience. And if you take your logo and you put it on a flask and a remote control and a baby toy, there is no connection between the products. So there is no connection with your target audience, and there is no promise there. It's just a logo.
Right. Okay. So we've talked a variety of different types of Amazon platforms. We were talking just before the call about why do you see this as a spectrum?
Well, once you realize that these words talk about different things, it's kind of weird to call it a spectrum, but this is a range of decisions you have to make as a seller. How much money do I have? How much time do I have? how much risk am I willing to take? Arbitrage, the basic arbitrage, takes little money and little risk, or as much risk as you are willing to take. It takes a lot of time to hunt the bargain, and it's limited with its potential. Let's say I find a really good bargain on a toy. I can only buy the toys that I have available to me at the shop that instant. If I decide to go on arbitrage, on what we call drop shipping arbitrage, and bring things out from the Far East because that's where they're so cheap, I have a time issue. My service levels are very poor in comparison to a local supplier. And I have a high risk if the supplier in China, whom I've never talked to, messes up. I have all the risk.
Right.
So it's a range on the decisions you have to make. You have to figure out, what are you willing to invest time-wise, money-wise? What are the risks you're willing to take? Why are you doing this, and where are you going? What is your target? Do you want to be rich tomorrow? Well, no one. None of these will work, of course. But if you're looking to go faster or deeper, or you want it to be more stable, are you in it for the flip or for the long run? All of these will define where on the range you want to find yourself.
Now, we've talked a bit about the different ranges, but how does this actually affect your cash flow?
Well, cash flow is an accumulation of expenses and income, revenues. And the different models create different accumulations. What creates a cash flow is how much you spend, when and when do you spend. I'm most versed in the white label cash flow, where you buy from the Far East, you have MOQs, you have to order enough in order to get the supplier to agree to work for you, in order to fill up a container. And those things will be spread over a period of time. Those expenses will be spread over a period of time. And during this time, you're not going to have any income from that inventory, which means your cash flow is going to go down very deeply on those units. And only when you start getting money coming in will you start going back up towards the black or the positive cash flow. My analysis has shown that for a white label, buying in China on standard operating procedures, cash to cash cycle, so from the moment you start investing until you finish bringing in those revenues, you can go up to about 250 days. And that is massive amount of time. Mind you, just for comparison, Amazon's cash to cash cycle is negative. They get money before they pay it, which is very much like the dropshipping model. But the other thing I've found out when I did this research is that around 80 to 90% of that huge amount of time, your cash flow is going to be negative. It flips to the positive very late in the game. Now, yeah, you have this huge margin and you're very profitable, but it's only in day 245. Everything else, you have to cough up this money somehow. So it talks about risks. It talks about time. And it talks about how much money do you need to have in pocket in order to run this business.
So for a typical Amazon seller getting started, how much, and cash flow is everything, so you have to make sure that you have the proper capitalization to get going. What do you think the average Amazon seller should have in inventory or in capitalization to bring a product to market?
The question is, which Amazon?
That's true. I'm thinking a private label seller.
No. Which Amazon? Because in the U.S., you need about $10,000 for your first product. And in India, this will take you 10 products deep. So one of the things that I would actually recommend is don't start with the U.S. Don't even start with the products you want to start. Get your beard wet, sorry. In a smaller and cheaper Amazon. I don't necessarily think it should be India. It's just that I have the details about India. But you can go to a European Amazon and work and get your skills level up at a cheaper entry point.
I've been able to go to a bunch of events last year, and they had a lot of European sellers. And one of the things that amazed me was how successful they were in Europe. And a lot of them didn't even have .com. And nor did they want .com because it was so much more competitive. So it was a smaller market. However, they were able to just sell their product that much more easily. And, you know, I see a few people that are listening right now, and I don't know if they have any comments on that, but selling in Europe to a smaller market, would you prefer selling in Europe or would you dive right into .com? I like the approach, like you just said, why not get your feet wet? You know, just try. I didn't say anything about my beard, but try the other markets and see if you can test that out. It'll be cheaper for inventory. It'll be cheaper for everything. But if anybody is selling on Europe in Europe or any other markets, tell us what your strategy is. How did you get into it? Are you selling over in .com and what were the differences? Okay, so let's go back. I was talking about private label seller. Typically, I'll look and I tell our clients that to be safe, you should have at least 3 times your inventory costs. I don't know what you think about that.
I don't have a ballpark number. It really depends on how you plan your cash flow. Well, if you do cash flow planning, if you have a cash flow cycle and you decide how you're going to do your inventory and your cash flow, then you know what you'll need. And the way you order and stagger your inventory defines the amount of money you're going to need. And in a classical, buy a big batch from the Far East, ship it to Amazon, start selling it, and then you're going to need to buy the next one just about the time this one starts selling. Yeah, X3 is the minimum.
Okay, I knew Victor would pipe up. All right, and I see Usman first. What does that say, Kels? I can't read it.
Yeah, so they have some questions about the VAT.
Sure.
So Usman's saying, but how do you deal with the VAT? The VAT is 20%, and then the profit margins are so tiny.
Well, a VAT, like any other expense, has to be priced into your product. That's the life.
Okay, Victor's got a question. I think it's along the same lines.
Yeah, if you're a U.S.-based seller getting started, why in the world would you want to get bogged down with VAT compliance?
Well, there's always a compliance to something. I can ask the same question about the U.S. and their sales tax, and inventory taxes, which vary from state to state and sometimes from county to county. The question here should be, why do you want to be a business owner? If you don't want to be bogged down, don't be a business owner. There's always compliances that you will need to do, and those things change all the time.
One thing I'd like to add here, and just to talk about complexities. So there are a lot of Amazon sellers, and Victor, I think you're selling off of Amazon, but I'm curious about this. Once you get off of Amazon, so Amazon is taking care of a lot of the tax collection right now. However, if you're selling on Shopify, if you're selling through other platforms, you're still responsible for that sales tax. So are people finding that, and I'm just kind of curious because I had to go through this just recently and a couple of my clients, that hey, it's great that Amazon's taking care of it a lot of the time. However, now I'm selling in all the different states, maybe selling some stuff up in Canada, and I've got all sorts of tax issues. Now, we're going off base here. We're going down a different rabbit hole. But, you know, if we want to talk about complexities, now that's complicated. You know, and if Amazon is the majority of your business and you're selling, let's say 10, 20, 30% on Shopify, man, you get stuck with all this compliance. And we've had Lil Roberts will be coming on and she'll be talking about this on Monday, just coincidentally, or this week, coincidentally enough. But it is something to think of because so many Amazon sellers now are going off of Amazon to get extra sales.
Well, I know, I understand the point of complexity. I want to give you a different point of view on this situation. It's easy. It's easier to be on Amazon. They take care of a lot of the complexities for you. They don't take care of everything, and they don't tell you where they have left you to take care of it yourself. For example, I know I'm not a tax person, and I know that the U.S. tax situation is confusing to me, but what I have been told is that Amazon will take care of getting the sales tax for you, but you have to report it. It's on you to report it state by state. So even if Amazon does a lot from you, it's still your responsibility. And the other thing I want to point out is that, and this is how I like to put it, don't put all your eggs in the Amazon basket. It's an amazing platform. It has its ups, it has its downs. But any platform, if you have everything in one platform, you are very exposed to risk. And if Amazon ever falters, whether it's on your specific account or globally, you go with it.
Yeah, true. I hear both sides. I hear one side. We had somebody on the other day that was saying, stick to Amazon, 100% Amazon, stick to what, you know, just become an expert. I've had other people come on and say, you know, you don't want to be a one-legged stool. I agree with that. I think you should be on multiple platforms and try to build it up, or, you know, just have some different products maybe on your e-com platform. What's interesting, I'm just trying to read. I can barely read, but I'm trying to read some of the comments that are coming through for the European. And now we didn't say go and try out the European side. However, you do have an allowance that if you wanted to test it out, and I think that's what we wanted to tell people is that, hey, if you just wanted to put your toe in the water, you can try it out and you don't have to worry about a ton of VAT issues. I forget what the exemption is, but you have to start reporting up to a certain point. I forget what the dollar amount is. I'm sure somebody knows here. But anyways, whether it be, you know, the UK or in the EU or over in Asia, Australia, it was just to get started to test the waters. And I know, again, a lot of Australians that I've talked to that have done it and they've gone to different countries and then they've come back into .com. But we're actually going one step further with this and we're saying, okay, not just private label selling, but all these other types, you know, try it out or look into it or, you know, find a course on it. I don't think we have any courses on it. I know Todd Snively has a course on the wholesale side, but just expand your horizons and see what else is out there possibly. That's it.
Well, I really like the model of starting with drop shipping to test a category. Why go to all the efforts of so drop shipping? I mean, drop shipping arbitrage. Validate your target audience validate your assumptions with a low investment first.
Right. And Usman, thank you. 85,000. Okay, 85,000 pounds. All right. All right. Now, Kelsey, do we have any other questions that are coming in? I saw there was a bunch of comments.
Yeah, Rad is asking, can a brand seller do arbitrage on the same accounts?
I think, and I'm not a very, I'm not a bona fide Amazon expert as to what Amazon's terms of service are. I think Amazon would like you to never do arbitrage. But I don't think that's a problem.
Yeah, I don't think that's I know it's not a problem at all to
I wouldn't put those products on the same pages as your brands. I wouldn't put them together because a brand is a promise, and having something here today gone tomorrow, that's not a good promise.
I agree 100%. You don't want to mix your brand with arbitrage. Yep. Simon says something about going global, Amazon, Etsy, eBay. You know what? I'll tell you something about Etsy. So Dave Kettner, my old partner in Amazon and beyond, he started looking into Etsy about a year ago. He took a product and he is just, or not a product, but a print-on-demand, his print-on-demand system, and he started selling on Etsy, I think in November, and he just killed it. He just killed it, and it was no inventory. It was all print-on-demand, and he just had to drive traffic from Facebook to get people to notice what he was doing. So, you know, Etsy, and I know, I don't know if Jody's listening, but if she is, I mean, she's killing it. We're not talking six figures, but we're talking like $50,000, $60,000 a month in extra income at a 20% to 30% profit. Not bad, you know, mm-hmm. And no risk. What, you can't go wrong with that. So anyways, and also eBay, that's another one. I know a few people on here have heard me talk about eBay, but I love eBay. eBay is not the eBay of 8-10 years ago, which everybody had an account and everybody thought sucked, well, most people. You know, they've changed their mind. Like they're actually going out of their way to bring brands into eBay. So there's a lot going on, and you know what's going to happen with Walmart, you know, that marketplace. Google Shopping and Google My Business. So Craig Darling was on just a little while ago. And, you know, with Google My Business now, your products automatically show up regardless if it's in Google Shopping or not. I mean, there's so many different outlets out there, even if 10%, 20% or 30%, you know, came in from these different outlets, it's helping you out. So
it's more than that. It's giving you stability. It's reducing your risk.
Yeah. All right. So Kelsey, more questions.
Yes. Usman, how to deal with the Chinese because they have such uncomparable cheap prices. And when I add VAT, it's like I'm making only 5% or something. What advice do you give?
Oh, this is a good one.
Yeah. This is a really good question. I don't have a slide on it. So I used to work at Intel and we had good questions. Those we had a slide on and we had amazing questions. Those are what the ones we take offline. So this is an amazing question. And I think we have a mix of things here. What do you mean when you say they have uncomparable cheap prices? You can buy from them at probably around those cheap prices. It's a question of value and the value you offer. If you're going to compete with a Chinese seller on their basic products, you're going to compete on price, then you're not going to win. It's like me trying to outrun Usain Bolt. Don't go where you don't have a really special selling proposition, where you don't have a real value to add. And they have their weaknesses, whether it's the service level, whether it's the language barrier, whether it's the time. Retail is a lot about speed, which is why I like having inventory on hand. It allows you to speed up your reaction time. Now, sure. The question is, the answer would be specific to the product and the pricing model. And again, I think I said it before, you have to price the VAT in. Don't set the price and then realize you have to pay a VAT on it. And then if after VAT the pricing is wrong, you need a new product.
Right. I'm so sorry. That if I were to work it backwards, whether it is over in the UK or over in North America, if I can't get three or four times my cost of goods out of it, at the end of the day, if I'm getting 5 points back, I'm not looking at it. I've got to have something that allows me to make a profit, or I just cut it. It's just not a good deal. Now, going back, Usman, about your product, Orion, you were right on. It's all about perceived value. I don't care two hoots about Chinese manufacturers. And maybe there's some people that, you know, will panic about it. I don't care. I'll sell the exact same product. I'll have a higher perceived value. If it's a shampoo or a conditioner, I'll package it completely different. My images are going to be great. My marketing is going to be superior. And I mean, if they want to compete on that level, that's great. But they're really just churn and burn. They want volume for the most part. I can't speak for everybody, but not all billion people. But, you know, for most of the sellers, they're just trying to look for quick turnaround, make a little bit of profit, and they're happy. Let the bottom dwellers deal with the bottom dwellers. Let the product cannibalization happen. I am going two or three or four steps higher than them in pricing, and I might not get 1,000 units a day. Hey, if I get 50 units or 100 units a day and I'm making more profit than them, I'll do that all day long. So that's probably the best way that I can talk about all the Chinese that are flocking in. You just have to have a better package, a better looking, a better written, a listing, better quality images, all of that. Take all of that into consideration. And you're not seeing a lot of Chinese going onto Shopify and doing anything that way. They're not going after the influencers. They're not going after all the different types of different product launch strategies. You know, they might be sticking to PPC. Are they building a social community? Everything that Amazon's giving us right now to build social communities, it's incredible. People are allowed to follow you now. You can drive traffic to your brand page on Amazon and get followers. Mm-hmm. That's pretty cool. So anyway, just to go on a rant about perceived value, but I love it. I love that competition. And if people are going to be on the page that are $3 and mine's $30, okay, that just means that I'm going to have a whole bunch of discount bargain shoppers that are going to come and they want that product, or do I want a really good quality buyer who's looking for quality and willing to pay a better price, even though the quality is fairly the same and it's just a quarter difference in packaging? but I'll take that all day long.
I'll tell you something I heard a long time ago. There was a company who did sound systems, and they had three packages: the regular, the silver, and the gold. And then somebody who's in the know told me all the boxes had exactly the same sound system, but they came with different warranties. Mm. The regular warranty said you're going to get this level of quality of sound, and you cannot complain if the sound isn't better than basic level. The silver level went 30 decibels higher and lower, or whatever it is that sound quality is measured by. They promised a higher quality. And if you didn't get the next level quality, you could return it and get a new one because they were committed to a different level. And the gold had an even higher level of quality promise. And that is three different products, even though all the wires, all the boxes are the same. Simply by telling your customer that you have a commitment to give them a different service level, a different value, you created a different product. And how do you show the value just from the listing when the customer is simply looking at the price? No, the customer is not simply looking at the price. I am a customer. I know. I have questions. And whether it's shopping for clothes or for other items, a lot of times everybody's pictures aren't clear enough. What size is it? Is it my size? Even if it's a toolbox, is it the size that I need? How do I measure it? How do I fit it? Is it going to work for me? There's a ton of information that you can give me. And as you create this communication through the listing, by talking about what's important for me as a customer, you are creating value. And yes, this could be copied, but so what?
Yeah, I agree 100%. And the other thing, you know, about showing value, if, and this comes back to your persona, or knowing your customer. So if Amazon is showing your product, and yep, there's three different types or 10 different types of people there, okay, let the people who are discount shopping go and get the cheapest product. They're going to be also the ones that are going to be taking advantage of all the discounts. I don't know about you, but we've got this product that sells extremely, it's a high dollar, it's over $100. And we put a coupon, a digital coupon out there. Do you realize that so many people don't take advantage of the digital coupon? Mm-hmm. It's crazy. So there's, you know, you can get $10 off. All right. You would think everybody would. But, and this is just my thought, is that people don't care. And I know, I just before I came on here, I was looking for a product. And what did I do? I went down and I checked out just very quickly on page one. I wanted to see who the best seller was. I saw, okay, there was a deal over here. I saw reviews. I looked at the listing. And then it came down to the image. I looked at the image and then the prices. I didn't want the cheap one. Like the one, and this just before I came on, there was a product there for $32. I didn't want it. It was the cheapest, which gave me the impression that it's the cheapest. I went up to the $45. I ended up buying the $60 one, because, and that was the upper area for this product. Those are the clients I want, or the customers I want. So if people are looking at it and they want it, and fine, all the other ones, those other 80% can go. Those competitors can make a dollar. I'll make $10 to $15 and I'll take the 10%, you know? Mm-hmm. And you'll find out that not only that, those are also the people that will build your brand. That's the start of brand loyalty. Right. And all those other ones, try to make them a brand loyal customer. They're going to go after price. So just a thought on that. And I know I'm just looking at the time now. So today we are ending the podcast a little early because we're going to be hopping over to Clubhouse for our 100th anniversary room. So it's going to be called The Rise of the Micro Brands. Kelsey's going to be putting the link in here. And just before we do that, again, put hashtag cash flow if you're interested in this, in the giveaway that Orion is giving us is incredible. It's $750-ish in value, and she's giving away two of the courses. So I think that's fantastic. So we'll just wait a couple of minutes before we do the Wheel of Kelsey and head over to Clubhouse. So anything else that you'd like to talk about just while Kelsey's putting in all the information? Orion.
Sorry, I was trying to get into the Clubhouse. Sorry.
No, I just started to see a couple of other questions coming down here too. So, what else can you, what other type of advice can you give to people that are looking at these different platforms?
I think you have to remember at all times that these are tools, and never let the tool manage your business. The car doesn't drive you, the tool doesn't manage your business. So have a strategy and use the tool. And if the tool doesn't fit, there are other tools. And I sometimes go into maybe LinkedIn or Facebook and see these posts where people are weeping and complaining about how hard Amazon is and how unfair it was. Well, it's a tool. The tool doesn't work, replace it. I think that's really, really important to keep that in your mindset.
Right, right.
And the other thing is, whatever I say, and I say it whenever I speak, is whatever I say is the theory and the numbers are the truth. So if I talk a lot about how to manage inventory and how to balance it and how to flow it, but then if you take your numbers and they don't add up and that doesn't make any sense for your business, don't do it.
Very good. Okay, so I think it's time for Wheel of Kelsey.
All right, and just to clarify, some of you guys have entered, some of you have won multiple times, especially like even in the last month, so you could do that. We're just going to hold off for the next couple of weeks just so new winners can come in, and so we don't have multiple winners. So I hope you guys understand. So if you see your name not in the Wheel of Kelsey, that's the reason. So we're just wondering.
But still email him and complain. That.
So I'll share my screen. Also, I don't know if you saw this, but as I'm doing this, Victor, out of this point, there are two main values of superior packaging. The first is to delight your customer and or make the product giftable. The second is to include it into your main image to differentiate your listing in search results.
Very good. So, yeah.
All right, so I'll share my screen. So we've got four people today. Okay, so two giveaways. So 3, 2, 1.
Usman. There we go.
And our second. Manny.
Okay, fantastic.
So if you've won, you can email me at k@lunchwithnorm.com. I'll put in the comments as well. And yeah, that should be it. And then I'll send the information over to Orion and get that all started.
Okay. So Orion, thank you for being on the podcast today. I really appreciate it, and just talking about all these different platforms and how people can utilize them. And please feel free to join us on Clubhouse in 10 minutes. 7 minutes. Oh, my gosh.
Thank you so much for having me. I had a really great time.
Great. Thank you.
And good questions, people.
Yes, great questions. Okay, everybody, so that's the end of our 100th anniversary podcast. We are going to be having Lil Roberts from Xanadu coming on and answering a ton of questions about Amazon accounting and tax, and she is the right person to do this. I've known Lil for years, and she's incredible. Kelsey.
Yes.
We have the Clubhouse link on.
Yes, we have the Clubhouse link. I think I posted it everywhere. I think I'll post it onto your Facebook personal page too.
Okay.
The streamer doesn't let me do that. And yeah, just some closing remarks. I think, Simon, it's always good to know. Please don't underestimate how freaking complicated selling on Amazon is. It is a tool, but you need to know how to use the tool.
Well, that's right.
Yeah. So I've got Faye, we got Usman. Congratulations, Usman. Congratulations, Manny. So both of you, k@lunchwithnorm.com. Please email me.
Okay. And
Victor, I'm not an Apple guy, so no Clubhouse for me. We'll miss you.
Come on, Victor. Get an Apple phone. I'll buy you the Apple phone.
All right. So remember, we have a special episode tomorrow. This is not a Clubhouse episode tomorrow. This is a regular Facebook, YouTube, LinkedIn episode. It's just the same time. It's just a bonus episode that we're doing. We're just trying to squeeze this episode in. And yeah, so we can have a live episode.
Yeah. So tomorrow, Branded by Women, and that's part of Seller Sessions. We're going to be talking to three amazing Amazon sellers. And then Wednesday is going to be Lil. So join us every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday at noon Eastern Standard Time. Guys, thanks for making this an incredible 100th episode and community, and we look forward to 100 more.
Thank you, everyone. 100th, 100th, 100th.